We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly chess interview show with accomplished chess players, authors, personalities, and adult improvers where they discuss their lives, their careers, and share tips about how to improve at chess. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. So without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. This week, we are joined by one of the strongest players in the world. He is a perennial top 10 player with a 2819 peak rating, a peak world ranking of number 2. He's the 7th highest rated player of all time. He was the world junior champion in 2009, 3-time French national champion, and he has been busy and productive lately. Of course, he was runner-up in the 2020-2021 FIDE Candidates Tournament, which seems like ancient history at this point. In more recent months, he won the Grand Chess Tour Croatia Rapid and Blitz. By the way, he's the number 3 rated Blitz player in the world. He's been number 1 in both Rapid and Blitz. In August, he won the Classical Sinkfeld Cup in impressive fashion. And in so doing, he became the first player in history to win clear first at the Sinkfeld Cup 2 different times. And so, as we said, he's been super busy, but he's back home in France with a brief respite. So we really appreciate him taking the time to join us. Grandmaster Maxime Bachier-Legrave, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Ben. And hi, everyone.
Maxime, what a couple months. So I've been, your blog is amazing, first of all. It's such a service to the chess fans that you dissect your games and sort of talk about your experiences, and you're very open about it. So I've been going through your blog, just trying to put together your sort of travelogue of the past couple months. And this is what I've come up with, Maxime. Can you tell me if I missed anything? Are you ready?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So you were in Paris, and then you went to Chalons-en-Champagne for a couple of days. You did an event in Paris, then went to Chalons-en-Champagne. Then July 5th to 12th, obviously, you were in Zagreb for the Grand Chess Tour. From there, you had a big voyage to Sochi for the World Cup. After the World Cup, a 35-hour journey to St. Louis, as detailed on your blog. You've been in St. Louis for more than a month with multiple events there, and you obviously had some success there, and you came home a couple days ago. Did I miss anything, Maxime?
No, that's good. Like, I did have a couple weekends in New York while I was in St. Louis, you know, just for a change of scenery. But okay. Other than that, the journey is complete.
Yeah, I get the impression you like New York. I know that prior to quarantine, you had been vacationing there too as well.
No, this was the most amazing story. So I was not busy preparing for the candidates because, well, I was not part of the candidates. So I visited a couple of friends in New York. So that was the general idea. I do like the vibe in New York. It's very similar to Paris in some sense, but also I have friends there, so it does make sense to go there, especially while I'm in the US. So just when I came back from New York in early March 2020, I received a message while I was in the taxi saying that I might be first replacement. I mean, my first replacement card in the candidates might actually be useful.
Yeah, amazing story. And of course, you did an interview with Agat Mater last year, I'm sure, among other interviews. But listeners who want to catch all the details of your scramble to go to the candidates can listen to that. But Maxime, I'm curious, as someone who lives not too far from New York, what sort of activities do you like to do when you're in New York City?
I was hanging out with friends several times. So, of course, you know, taking walks in Central Park and around town is nice. I've done the touristic stuff, like, you know, Empire State Building one time, and I think that's enough. In general, I just like, you know, just the way I'm in Paris, like hanging out with friends, visiting new places, should be bars, restaurants, or, you know, this time we also went to a bowling alley. So, you know, pretty regular stuff, just, you know, when it's with friends and, you know, in a place I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm starting to be aware of New York, but it's still not a place I know. So it's a place where I still have a lot to discover. So it's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's always nice when you can have the locals show you around. But Maxime, let's enough about New York. Let's check in on how your stamina is. So just a huge run of tournaments. And of course, sometimes even in the travels we mentioned, you're playing in online events on top of that. And obviously, you've had a lot of success, which means you've won some good prize money. But how is your mental state and your stamina as you get a little break here back in France?
I mean, my mental state in general, I'm feeling quite pumped. I mean, that's normal. It's been a good run of successes. It's been quite the turnaround from the start of the year where I had a few disappointments. Including, of course, my second place in candidates, which, you know, in other tournaments wouldn't really be a disappointment, but when it's a candidate, it's only the first place that, you know, that counts. There was obviously still the disappointment of being knocked out by Sergei Karjakin in the World Cup, and of course not making it to the final. I mean, I didn't even make it to the quarterfinals, but at the same time, it was a match where I played decently well. So I was feeling that I was getting my level of play, you know, back around with Croatia, and then it culminated in the Singfield Cup. And of course, I'm hoping to capitalize on that. In terms of physical shape, it's been a few exhausting months. And of course, when I'm not at home, it's more difficult to exercise properly. I mean, I don't have my personal coach with me when I'm out in tournaments. And for instance, in St. Louis, it was a bit bizarre because every morning at 9, 10 a.m., it's already almost too late to go out for a jog because it's already in the 90s outside. So like,
Impressive command of Fahrenheit there, Maxime.
Well, maybe 90s is...
No, I think you're right.
85 to 90, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been in 2 months anyway. So I've been, translating Celsius to Fahrenheit or every day, basically. In terms of physical shape, well, I did go to my coach a couple of times this week. But obviously, there's a lot of things to remember and to do again to get back in shape. I mean, I don't have much time, of course, before Riga, which is the next very big thing. But I'm trying to capitalize on the months I have to, rebuild my physical shape, knowing that, of course, my chest shape is as good as ever.
Yeah, great to see. You wrote on your blog just before all the trips that I mentioned on July 2nd, 2021, you wrote, "It's clear that I'd like to find some stability in my game and become more consistent and regular again. Everyone knows that I have a lot of similarities with Nepo. There was a time when he played very much like I do now, very erratically. Since then, he's become much more stable and confident. It's my goal to get back to that state of stability and confidence that I had in a not so distant past." So, Maxime, I mean, I love the honesty there, but also, I mean, from my sort of Potzer's vantage point, it seems like you made some real progress. I gather you feel that way as well?
For sure. Of course, every progress then must be confirmed. And but it's clear that the spiral of, there's a virtuous spiral and, a negative spiral that can install in every, not only in every chess player, basically, I think in every sportsman, especially when it's individual sports we're talking about, like tennis, like boxing or cycling, or, so many more. But anyway, clearly, I've created this sort of virtuous cycle where, I'm playing better simply, and my results have been showing. So results of my hard work, of course, and clearly now I want to capitalize on that, and not relax because I've had a couple of good months. I want to keep on this trend.
Yeah, and as you mentioned the Grand Swiss, FIDE Grand Swiss, which will take place in Latvia in late October, and the top two spots earn a place in the 2022 candidates. So obviously you've had an amazing year again, great accolades, gain rating points, won a lot of prize money, but how much bigger is the winning, getting a spot in the candidates compared to that stuff, if at all, Maxime?
Clearly, the ultimate goal, of my career would be to become world champion, and I've been, working towards that goal, with my staff and, adding new people to my staff, adding new chess players to my team, and, trying to play my best chess in every circumstance. And of course, that's also why it was frustrating in the early part of the year, where I really had my worst chess shape in like 5 to 6 years with the Tata Steel. And then even in the candidates, where I prepared in every single detail to be at my best physical shape, which actually was the case, but the chess moves were not following around, and that was really frustrating. Clearly qualifying to candidates is the goal, and then winning them is another goal, but of course it should be taken step by step. because I know better than anyone how tough it is to actually qualify for the damn thing. So then, if we hopefully I can do it immediately in Riga. I know that the Grand Swiss has a lot of random element to it. Let's say in the sense that I can play extremely well. I could play extremely well and still not get one of the first two spots. Compared to the World Cup, where I know that, you know, if I played in every game, my best chess, there's a good chance I would make it because it's one-on-one matches. But anyway, no matter the results, I want to have given it my best shot. And then, in the worst case, come with, the feeling that I'm still playing great chess, especially in big events like the Grand Swiss, to be, fully rejuvenated for the FIDE Grand Prix next year. Yeah. But obviously hoping that there will be no FIDE Grand Prix for me early 2022.
Sorry, could you say the last sentence again, Maxime?
The last sentence or...
About the Grand Prix in 2022?
Yeah. So,
the last spots. Sorry.
The last part. Yeah. I was just saying that I'm hoping that I won't be attending the FIDE Grand Prix early 22.
Gotcha. Okay. And Maxime, if you just bear with me for a minute, I'm just going to give a quick overview to listeners of the candidates. Exactly. Who qualifies for the candidates is often in flux and it can be a bit confusing. Just wanted to mention
for everyone.
Yeah. For participants as well. Yeah. So whoever loses the world championship between Magnus and Nepomniachtchi will automatically be seeded into the 2022 candidates tournament, which normally it takes place every other year, but because of the COVID delay, there's one next year to get back on schedule. Rajabov, due to the confusion and controversy surrounding his dropping out of the previous candidates, has been seeded in. And then in the aforementioned Chess World Cup, Jan-Christoph Duda, and Sergei Karjakin are in. So that's four of the eight spots. And as Maxime has alluded to, the four remaining spots, two are the FIDE Grand Swiss, which will be about a couple weeks away when this interview comes out. And it's, as Maxime said, a unique tournament in that it's a Swiss format. So it is invitational, but it's got over 100 of the top players in the world in it. So no matter how strong you are, it's tough to emerge as the top two from one of those. And then as Maxime also alluded to, the final two spots go to the top two finishers in the FIDE Grand Prix 2022, which Maxime has just revealed. If he can qualify via the Grand Swiss, he'll cool his heels a little bit, understandably. So
go ahead. It's even a requirement. Like in the regulations, if you are qualified to candidate, you are allowed to play in the FIDE Grand Prix only if you, withdraw your spot.
Oh, okay. But you can still play in the World Cup and the Grand Swiss, even if you're qualified, right?
Yeah, well, I would say it's a bit confusing in the rules, but at least for FIDE Grand Prix, it's clear. I mean, I would rather have it for all tournaments than none, but let's say that for FIDE Grand Prix, it's very understandable, especially considering the new format that, players qualified to candidates cannot come and intervene too much.
Yeah. So are you in favor long-term of even more sort of, I guess you could call them restrictions where like, did you think that Magnus should have been able to play in the World Cup?
Well, it's really up to FIDE to come up with these regulations, but yeah, it does feel a bit weird that, players who are qualified for the cycle are allowed to play in, the early part of the qualifying cycle. It I mean, it could pose long-term problems for some certain situations where, you know, I mean, we've been fortunate that it hasn't happened, but like, especially in the Grand Prix, it could cause some controversies. And, well, even in the World Cup, like when you have Magnus Carlsen knocking you out in the early part, I mean, it does feel a bit bitter, probably.
Yeah, and that gets me to my first Patreon question. Supporters of the show, of course, can find out the guests. And when we are privileged to interview luminaries such as Maxime, they can send in questions. So the first question actually has to do, Maxime, with the candidates format. So Andrew Perry writes in to ask, he says, what do you think of the complicated rules used to select candidates in the candidates tournament? I know that he mentions he didn't think the wild card is fair. The wild card previously, just for listeners who aren't familiar, someone would be selected by FIDE on top of all the general qualifications. Now, I guess you could argue that maybe Rajabov's a wild card, maybe not, but there's no other wild card for this upcoming one. So anyway, Andrew says, instead of a wild card, I would propose that the runner-up in each candidates tournament should get an automatic entry into the next candidates. What do you think of that idea? And maybe you could speak more broadly, Maxime, about what you think sort of the ideal format would be.
Yeah, I'll speak more broadly. Well, I mean, it would be nice, of course, if the runner-up was qualified immediately, but I don't think that's right, actually. So there's a lot of things that could be discussed about the format of qualification for the candidates. I think, in general, waiting spots are not a bad idea. But they were anyway mathematically wrong in the sense that it was taking the average of the rating, meaning that if you have a good rating early on, it's a huge advantage and sometimes irreparable. So I'm a bit mixed about the Grand Prix. To be honest, but it's been only the second year, and you know what? At least you know it could be worthy of testing. So, but in general, I would be more in favor of like something more simple and that doesn't require that many events. At the same time, I do like the World Cup, so I'm not sure if we should get rid of the World Cup because it's a great event, but maybe it could become a yearly event. For the Grand Prix, I think, you know, qualifying through a Swiss event is a bit weird when there's only two spots at stake. I mean, there's many risks even of collusion in the last games because simply one player can be out of the race and the other might need a win. And well, you know, then it would even be understandable if players were colluding. I mean, it wouldn't be ethical for sure. It would be something I strongly reject myself, but you know, it would be hard to reproach the players for taking the pragmatic approach there. So I think then maybe all these were good when it was the internal, and then you had at least five spots, I think, five or six spots. And then, you know, it gets in a way much more regulated and much less random. So this could be a way. Another way, which I don't really like, would be to take all spots through rating. I mean, of course, it would be fairer in a way, in the sense that you would get almost automatically the best players to play. But I do like the fact that there's a qualification process. One thing I definitely found strange, though, is, you know, change in every cycle, and like even this time as a change in the FIDE Grand Prix cycle, which at some point was just a few one robins. then a few, Swiss events, but with a very limited number of players, and then a few knockouts, and now it's partly a group stage and then a knockout, and the regulations are just weird, to be honest. I've read through them, and there are a couple of points that I find disturbing, and actually same way than the Grand Swiss, because it's going to be double round robins. It might happen that in the last FIDE Grand Prix, I mean, things are very clear for some players. And, you know, I mean, collusion could become the pragmatic thing to do. And again, that's not what I like. That you can simply collude and it would be the sensible thing to do. And
right.
Yeah, this is just very strange that going for these formats that FIDE encourages this, because at least in the World Cup, you know, it's a knockout, so, you know, you can collude with your opponent, of course, but your opponent has just as much at stake as you, and so not the normal thing to do, the pragmatic thing to do would be to fight. And so I thought it would make more sense to go towards this format where, you know, collusion wouldn't be made. I mean, possibility of collusion wouldn't be made not only easy, but simply sensible from a, you know, results-oriented point of view. So I really hope this is not the trend we're going to, because, you know, even when, you know, I don't doubt the probity of the players in general, but there will be, you know, for sure cases where at the very least there will be a doubt. And, you know, if it is not the real thing, and yeah, that's not how I envisage sports, you know. I think sports should be ethical and, you know, fair towards all players. And this is why I didn't like the rules of the FIDE Grand Prix and the fact that there's two spots through Grand Swiss, which, you know, in both cases encourage such practice.
Yeah, well, thank you for your honesty on that matter. I've long been an advocate for bringing back the interzonals too. There's no substitute for the head-to-head combat, but again, not everyone agrees, but it's certainly unusual. I know you're a big sports fan. It's unusual to have sort of such high stakes, slottings dictated often by people who are no longer in competition for that prize.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And, you know, that also was the case in the candidates itself. Do you like the format of the actual candidates tournament once it gets down to the final eight or whatever it may be?
Well, you could say that, you know, eventually, at the end of the tournament, depending on who you play, you do have an edge because players are less, you know, incentivized to play well because they're already out of the race. But at the same time, it's the case for everyone who have been tournament we play. And at the beginning, everyone is incentivized to, you know, to play as well as possible. So it doesn't trouble me quite as much.
Okay. Well, Maxime, we have a lot of topics I want to hit. So we'll leave it there on the topics of candidates and format and all that stuff. And we're going to take a quick break.
Yeah,
and
it's complicated enough. As it is.
Okay. Well, thanks for being willing to talk about it. We'll take a break and be right back. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by chessmood.com. Chessmood is a subscription-based instructional website founded by Grandmaster Avtech Gregorian, who you can hear on episode 192 of Perpetual Chess. Founded by Avtech and his team of grandmasters, there's a huge library of opening, middle game, and end game videos. There's special events like webinars, streams, one-on-one blitz games. Every Chess Mood member gets a consultation call with one of the Grandmaster coaches. And also be sure to check out Chess Mood's free content. Avtech has a great blog. They also have a YouTube channel where they're posting videos from Grandmasters daily. So links you need are in the show description, but be sure to check out chessmood.com. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by aimchess.com. AimChess, of course, collects your games from the major chess sites and then gives you an actionable study plan. So it's a great resource for players and coaches alike. It tells you how you compare to your rating peers in openings, end games, time management, all that stuff. It told me I was behind on the clock in 87% of my recent blitz games. I think I might need to work on that. And thanks to AimChess for pointing that out. But it's a great product. Go to AimChess and check it out. And if you decide to try out a subscription, use the code PERPETUAL30 to save 30%. As always, the info you need is also in the show notes.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible, because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So, Maxime, another great interview you did. We recently had our Grandmaster Surya Ganguly on the show. I'm a big fan of his, and I forgot to mention his In Conversation series on YouTube, where he interviews a lot of legends of the game, including yourself. And as you alluded earlier to having a staff that's growing, and you alluded in your interview with Grandmaster Ganguly to having a performance coach having been sort of added to the fold. So I wanted to hear a little bit more about that. If you're able to speak about what sort of work you guys do.
There's a lot of things at stake. It's really mostly about being able to, you know, take, of course, the things that I've done well, you know, during a chess game, and of course, before, after the chess game, because, you know, to actually play well in tournaments, it's not enough to play good moves, but, you know, little by little, tournaments by tournaments, I've developed a routine of play and, you know, a chess tempo during the games and, you know, drinks I would get during the game, candies, I mean, nuts, chocolate, whatever, like all this sort of stuff, what I would do as sports before the game, maybe after the game, etc. But to put all of these things under review and find, you know, piece by piece, which piece fits into, you know, things I should keep on doing and which piece could be even improved. And this is basically what's done, and for every aspect of my game, and of course, to also help, you know, with handling of stress, handling of emotions during a game, and, you know, all this sort of stuff. So it's pretty generic. Of course, I won't get into the specifics, but this is what we've been doing.
Okay, yeah. And you mentioned in your blog, obviously, the candidates, just to bring it back there for a second, because you played Nepomniachtchi, who, of course, won the tournament in the penultimate round when he was already in front. And you mentioned that he was visibly very nervous. So I was just curious if you could describe a little bit more what you saw in him that showed his nerves. Obviously, it's a high-stakes moment, so it's understandable.
It's definitely high-stakes moments. And, even now I was nervous because, you know, I mean, it was my last chance to win the whole thing. And Well, I had the unfortunate task of trying to win with black in a classical game when, you know, your opponent is very satisfied with a draw. So that was, a different type of preparation even for me before the game. I mean, of course, different openings, and but even different state of mind. And in the game, clearly I think Jan was not really trying to play the best moves. He was trying to keep some sort of control. He was also going back to his old habits of playing fast, running away from the board. I noticed, a few more times than usual, he was just going out of the playing room because he needed to be, to maybe catch a break with his emotions or whatever. I mean, he would speak better about this than me, but this is the feeling I was having during the game, that he was trying to keep the game at a distance, even like not to be too involved in the game, to not to have too much emotions. But anyway, when it mattered, he did play some good moves to consolidate his position. So, you know, he was in actual great shape during the candidates, and he was playing very well. And without that, I'm not sure he would have been able to actually withstand the game and play the few good moves he needed. But in general, he was a very deserving winner.
Yeah, it was impressive. And he mentioned in like post-tournament interviews that he had a whole lot of trouble sleeping throughout the tournament, especially the second half. So makes it all the more impressive that he was able to sort of keep his nerves.
For sure.
So, of course, hearing you discuss the sort of rise in level, as again you mentioned on your blog and just cataloged, makes me wonder, I have to ask your thoughts on the World Championship match. What do you think, Maxime?
It's hard to say. I think I would give Magnus the advantage simply in terms of experience. I've worked with him, or for him, mostly in his match of 2016, and I've realized, from the inside what it meant, and in terms of pressure, in terms of handling with different scenarios, in terms of opening preparation, in terms of physical fitness that you need to withstand for the whole match. So clearly the fact that Magnus played five of those matches is a huge advantage. And he did learn, for instance, it was clear that in this match against Sergei Karjakin, he was frustrated in mid-tournament. I mean, in mid-match, he had missed a couple of opportunities and then went astray and lost with White very unnecessarily. And then in the match against Fabiano in 2018, he didn't try his luck in this way and, didn't mind going for the tiebreaks at all. So clearly, for instance, the question is Jan going to be able to, withstand the pressure and not get too impatient if, the match starts with like 4-6 draws and, tension builds up. And clearly this is a question because Jan in the past had a pattern for playing, a bit impatiently, trying to force things around. And because he's a very strong player, sometimes forcing things would work, but against Magnus Carlsen, it might not. So so these sort of questions. But in terms of, actual level of play, he will be a serious contender. Then, what is going on in Norway is difficult to judge because he's trying out new things. and he's definitely not playing at his best there, but he's also had some interesting games. Then could it affect him that he's not playing his best chess and maybe, you know, affect his play in the match? I don't know. I don't think so. He has had plenty of time to prepare for the match, and then we'll see. But yeah, because of experience, and of course because, you know, overall he has been the stronger player, I would still give Magnus an edge for the match, but something like 60 to 40.
Okay, sounds reasonable. Now, obviously, Maxime, you seem to have pretty good relations with many of the top players. Someone like, I mean, you already mentioned training with Magnus, and someone like Jan taking a leap forward, and obviously it's been reported that even for the candidates, he had solid team helping him, and I'm sure even more so for the World Championship. So do you talk about sort of tangible changes and preparation routines with other elite players, or is it a little bit... Like, is it a little bit too...
I would say it's a gray area, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, we do speak quite openly about some things, but like, even for Magnus to bring me on his team in 2016, I mean, it had the obvious advantage of, you know, having an elite player for the opening preparations, and also for rapid play, which I think proved useful when he played some rapid games with me just before the tie breaks.
But it
did reveal some secrets there, and you know, it's not necessarily something you want to do. At the same time, I also did reveal some secrets to most of his teams in terms of how I was judging positions, how I was, you know, working in terms of openings, because everyone has a very, you know, unique style of checking things out. Even if at the end it's all going to be the same lines, but there are some different perspectives and some positions and ways to work. So yeah, it's definitely not something we do usually, but one thing is for sure that I have a lot of respect for all players, you know, from the elite. I know how difficult it is to be there. And we do have, you know, some common grounds to start with. So that's good.
Yeah. Now, I wasn't aware of this, these training games, these rapid training games with Magnus. So did those take place in the middle of the match, like before the rapid playoff in 2016?
Well, I mean, you know, there are many moments where, you know, you need practical play if you're going to play a match. So Magnus was, you know, always very happy to play some games. But yeah, we did some specific games, you know, in like
certain
as much of match condition as it is possible when it's only training, but before the playoffs, yeah.
So were you hiding out in New York for that match?
No, I was not. No, this was for internet. I was not in New York at all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I gather you have not been approached by either party for this upcoming World Championship. Obviously, feel free to punt on any question I ask if you want.
No, I mean, the thing is, you cannot take me by the words there, because it's okay. Okay. I'm going to say no, but...
Right.
But yeah, you can trust me that I haven't been approached.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, again, you seem you seem super busy. So if you were, you got your own World Championship title to chase.
For sure.
So we're going to take one more break, Maxime, and then I have some more Patreon questions to dive into. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by our longtime sponsors, our original sponsors, Chessable.com. Chessable, of course, is known for its proprietary move trainer technology, which utilizes spaced repetition to help you remember openings, tactical patterns, whatever it is that you're working on. They have a huge library of courses, including the free, short, and sweet versions of various openings. Speaking of openings, they just dropped Lifetime Repertoires, The London System by Grandmaster Lequang Liam. Love or hate The London, you got to know what to do against it, so be sure to take a look for that. And don't forget to sub to the How To Chess podcast hosted by yours truly. We just had Peter Sfidler on, other big guests in the works. So all the links you need are in the show description. Let's get back to talking chess.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, so Maxime, we are back. We have some chess training and improvement sort of related questions. And the first one I want to hop into is from Alex Robinson. Thanks for supporting Perpetual Chess, Alex. So Alex asks, what are the most effective ways you have found to study and train? Now, Maxime, since you've done so many interviews over the years, I thought it might be more interesting to hear about what you're doing recently.
Well, in general, the needs change, for depending on the players, but also depending on what stage of my career I am. So, for instance, I've always had trouble, treating training games as, the useful things they can be when you take them seriously, but I've always been more of a competitor, but now I started realizing it's very important to take them, to approach them very seriously and to be able to be in condition when the tournament starts. So, of course, there's a lot more of, tactics, more than tactics, even calculation, like thorough calculation. And, Etienne has not always been happy with my involvement in those, but I'm trying to improve in that respect to, be more fit. And, then, of course, for me, the needs depend on whether I have a tournament coming up, whether I've just had one of three tournaments and all these practical exercises are not really needed because I've had all the practice I needed. Things do evolve and basically then the approach is different for every player, but one thing you generally need is, to have someone to guide you and to, make sure that you're on the right track. We can see more with more distance, more clearly what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, and focus on improving what you're doing wrong, because I think that's in general the most important, because especially nowadays games are not won because of things you've been doing right. It is a bit the case, but if you have some blatant weakness and you do not get rid of them, then everyone's gonna murder you on those weaknesses.
Great insights there. Yeah, I saw you mention in a little biographical video that you did when you launched your blog. I definitely, as Agat Mater did, recommend that listeners really dig into all the material on Maxime's website. It's amazing. But you mentioned that you think that what differentiates Magnus is that he makes fewer mistakes than all the other elite players.
It's probably still the case now. Also, the gap has reduced. This has been one of his main strengths. And now, things evolve and, with the new material at our disposal and, every detail matters, of course, at the top level. So every detail in terms of chess preparation also matters.
Now, you mentioned the gap closing. Do you feel that's because of the other top players making fewer errors, or is Magnus making a few more, or both?
Maybe a little bit of both, because, you know, let's say when Magnus had this great run in 2019, he was definitely ahead of his time in terms of preparation. And this gap has reduced. And the thing is, when you have great preparation, you know, when you get an edge in the opening, you have, not only do you have an easier position to play, so fewer chances of mistakes, but your opponent also has a more difficult position to play, so many more chances to for mistakes.
Do you have any openings you think are especially likely to be seen in the World Championship, or is it just impossible to predict at this stage?
Oh, that's really not easy to predict. Like, I definitely didn't predict Magnus using the Svechnikov in 2018. But in general, it's not even about the opening. It's about the edge you can find in terms of preparation, in terms of new ideas, and, you know, constructive new ideas. So anyway, clearly, I mean, Magnus is still the best player in the world, but, you know, sometimes he doesn't get his preparation in, and, you know, when he's out of his comfort zone, he does make mistakes, even if he's a tremendously gifted player.
Okay. And the next Patreon mailbag question is from longtime friend of the pod, Chris Wainscott. And Chris asks, Maxime, how does your preparation, both pre-tournament and pre-game, change between a closed event like the Sinkfield Cup and an open event like the Grand Swiss? And then I have another one.
Well, I would say pre-tournament, it does change because, you know, clearly in a Grand Swiss, I'm going to need a lot more wins. So I'm going to need to take lots, I mean, sensibly more risks. But then during the course of the tournament, you know, it's, you know, you don't have things planned out maybe as much as, you know, in a round robin where you know in advance who you're going to play and with which color. But for sure, you know, the specifics that you get the day before are essentially going to be the same idea. Then it's mostly the difference in approach, in the fact that you need to win more games.
And the second part of Chris's question was, other than the increased importance of opening prep, did your approach to chess improvement change as you got stronger, say from IM to GM, 25 to 2600, 26 to 2700, 2700 plus, et cetera?
Yeah, maybe I've not focused enough at some point in that area, but for sure, there's, you know, some endgame knowledge that's useful to know and then to remember. So luckily, this is something I do naturally, so it was not visible. But some theoretical endgames are very useful to know, and because something cannot really be invented and some things are of particular importance. Let's say rook and games, of course, or queen and pawn against queen is also a very difficult one. But these do bring some half points here and then, and they do make the difference at the end of the day because, you know, the gap is not that big between the players of the top. There's that. And then, of course, the calculation. At some point, I was, you know, relying on my calculation skills, which are good, and on my intuition, which is also very good. But this way, I was sometimes a bit lazy during games and not calculating deeply enough and sometimes missing things that were costly. So I've also tried to work on that. And clearly, for instance, in the Sinkfield Cup, I was very happy because I did make one calculation mistake. I mean, what I call a calculation mistake in the during the World Tournament, which is, well, very little.
Yeah, you had some beautiful games in that tournament. And you mentioned earlier your who I believe to be your lead trainer, Grandmaster Etienne Becquereau. When you make decisions like this about which end games to work on and stuff like that, like how much of it is coming from you and how much of it is coming from Etienne and your team?
I mean, it's, you know, not always evolving process, and, you know, we always have a dialogue about what we should try to do and what's next for the next tournaments. But of course, in general, one of the good things is that he's been working with me Etienne's been working with me for a long time now, and he does know me and my needs in terms of you know, the positions I need to get and the ideas I need to focus on. And he has a clear view as well because he follows extensively the games when I'm in tournaments and when I cannot really do that. So this way he can suggest me a lot of things. And then, of course, you know, if I don't agree on something, I will say it. But he does have some good ideas.
Makes sense. And is he generally traveling with you, Maxime?
Not very often. Etienne has a family, so of course. And he's also quite active as a chess player. He was quite successful, for instance, in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And so he does travel with me sometimes. Well, for instance, at the World Cup, because he was there playing. But generally, he will go, you know, only 3-4 times a year. Sometimes even less. Like, for instance, in the candidates, he was not there because it was more convenient for him to work from home, and I did have Sébastien Mazet there with me, but for things to run smoothly and to have company that's definitely needed when you're not doing well at the start. So that was very useful, but yeah. So like, if you know the place is nice, we know the place, we know we can hang around, you know, for instance, in London or in Zagreb, you know, Etienne's been there. Also in tournaments where it's of vital importance. So like when he was in the World Cup in Tbilisi, it was Tbilisi in 2017, Etienne got knocked out, I don't remember when, probably second or third round. But then he did stay until the end of the event because, well, there's rapid games, there's tie breaks, and there's always something that's needed during those times. So it was very useful that he was there. And same goes for FIDE Grand Prix of the last kind, because there were tie breaks. He was there in Riga and in Hamburg.
Okay. Yeah, and speaking of tie breaks, I saw that again, you know, this seems to come up a lot in these tournaments you mentioned earlier, how, you know, generally a lot of these formats could be changed, but there's no tie break playoff for the Grand Swiss, even if it determines who goes to the candidates. Do you have an opinion on that decision, Maxime?
Well, a very strong one. Like, even in the candidates, there's no playoffs, I think. I mean, there's only a playoff if all mathematical tiebreaks are even. So, of course, I think every tournament, should the players end on the same number of points, should be decided on playoffs. And even like I could even suggest, for instance, it's just a suggestion out of the blue. I mean, not out of the blue, because it's something I've thought about some time ago. But so let's say you have a grand twist, and instead of doing it 11 rounds, you do it, let's say, 9 rounds. And then you have the top 8 qualifying for some sort of round robin, of course. And then you could say you only need to know the 2 spots, so you have only 2 rounds to do. I mean, it does make for these 8 players 6 more days of work, but you know the stakes are big enough. You do remove that bit of randomness of you know getting first 2. And in general, it could be an interesting idea, even in one robins, to have, you know, let's say in one robins, you have the first 4 players to play in a playoff, I mean, in a playoff, especially during rapid tournaments, maybe. So, like, this could be a possible evolution. But then again, like I said, there's been too much changes. So in general, I think also we would need a little stability. So I'm not saying this change should be enforced right away. Like, but we need something clear, like a clear cycle of things.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because as a chess fan, I always feel that way. I mean, first of all, it's more entertaining, the heightened drama.
Yeah.
But I'm
If I may add a point, chess as a spectator sport has been growing a lot in the last 2 years. And in general, now that I interact, you know, with this new audience, especially this new French audience that we have, I mean, it's too complicated. There are things that don't make sense. In every tournament, the format is different, and they just cannot follow. And
yeah.
It just, you know, because as chess players, we are used, you know, to the chess scene, we are used to the chess games. But for them, it's already a challenge to actually follow the chess games. Mm-hmm. So if they have to wonder what's the time control, what's going on there, so like, you know, it's clear that we have a lot of work to do compared, for instance, to ATP, where, you know, you jump in and you know, okay, this is a ATP 1000, you know, Grand Slam, whatever, and you know what's at stake, you know the format, and it's much easier to follow. And I think we should definitely work on that, you know, to not to lose our audience in terms of, you know, not to confuse them.
Yeah, I agree. And as my friend Greg Shaharia said, I mean, just because something is the way things were always done doesn't mean it's the right way to do it.
For sure.
Hearing you talk about the sort of explosion of popularity of chess reminded me that Anish Giri did an interview with I Am Levy Rosman, Gotham Chess, in which he said that the Queen's Gambit boom actually hasn't affected the elite level that much. Your tournaments are kind of the same. I was wondering if that's your perspective too, Maxime.
That's true, but you know, I don't think that was the point, because I think, you know, top level has been treated quite well in the last few decades. I mean, clearly there was a time where it was not as easy to make a living as a top chess player, especially considering we were not a spectator sport yet. So, you know, we definitely have nothing to complain about. But it's very good that, you know, it helps a lot new players, maybe, you know, to have opportunities of, you know, commentary, coaching, whatever. And, you know, it helps chess grow. And I think long-term, it's great for everyone. And, you know, maybe, you know, you could say that maybe in 5 years our press money will go higher because of this. So, for me, life hasn't changed because of Queen's Gambit, but my life was already okay. And
yeah,
it's good that, you know, everyone gets a piece of the cake. I think it's fairer this way.
Yeah, it's been great to see. And obviously, you've been France's top player for many years. What is your life like, especially when you're home? Like, how often do you get recognized and stuff? I see that you've done a ton of media, but I'm just curious how often people note you when you go for a walk or a jog in Paris.
This has evolved dramatically in the last few years. So there's Blitzstream doing a lot of work as a streamer on his Twitch channel. And during the candidates, he had like up to 35,000 viewers. So let's say that 2 to 3 years ago, I was maybe recognized once every month on the street, maybe once every two weeks. And now, like, since I came back home, and, you know, I've not been outside, you know, every day, you know, 16 hours a day, and just taking regular walks, I've been recognized 1 or 2 times a day.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's actually impressive.
How do you like it, or would you rather kind of be below the radar?
For now, it's good. Maybe at some point it will get old. And like, if it comes to being recognized 20, 30 times a day, it will definitely get too much. But for now, I like it. Like, I embrace it. I feel like it's good also that, you know, I do interact with this audience quite a lot through Blitzstream channel. So the interaction is very, you know, casual, normal. So this is where I want it to be, so that you can talk to me like, not like I'm some kind of freak, but like I'm, you know, a normal human being, and this is what's happening right now. So they're not scared of me. They're not, and I definitely don't want to scare them off.
That's great. Yeah, Blitzstream, of course. I am Kevin Bordy, who I interviewed in like 2016 or 17, and he was still in FM. And then he's just, it's great to see the explosion
actually,
in popularity.
Actually, he's always been a national master. So because he is not playing over the board at all. But let's say that considering at least his split skills are closer to a GM.
Yeah. Great to see. Well, Maxime, it sounds like if you're a little worried about being recognized too much, you got to be careful in this world championship cycle, because if you win, it's going to be a whole nother level.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, I'm not scared of being recognized too much. It just that, you know, I like to take at least like 30 seconds, 1 minute, you know, if they want a photo or something. And of course, if I get recognized 20 times a day or more, I mean, at some point, it will get too much. And I will have to say, no, I have to go. Sorry, I'm in a rush or whatever. But and I mean, it probably does get, I'm not at that level yet, but I know that, for instance, Magnus did have a tough time when he became a national superstar in Norway, because the attention can be too much, and sometimes you just want to be casual, you know, doing your thing, and not being famous at all. But, you know, for now, it's really good. For now, I just embrace it.
That's good. Yeah. And yeah. So we have a couple more listener questions, so I'm going to dive in. This one is from Matt Hunt. Thanks for the support, Matt. And Matt asks, he says, what was the motivation behind your bachelor's degree in mathematics? How hard was it to balance chess study with math degree study?
Yeah. So first of all, I wouldn't have done it if I didn't think I could do it. And let's say that I could have done more extensive math studies, like, you know, going to prep school instead of university, which is definitely more challenging in France, and where you learn a lot more. So let's say this was the easy way to multitask. I mean, it wouldn't have been possible to multitask if I went to prep school. So in general, the university didn't get any kind of challenging before the third year. So luckily, that was basically the finish line. And it was possible for me, you know, to go out to tournaments and, you know, come back after 2 weeks, just catch up with the math. And, you know, I did have a few awkward talks with teachers. You know, they were like, I've not seen you since the start of the year. Do you really think you can get off so easily from it? And like half an hour into the lesson, I would be answering their questions and, you know, getting most of them right. So then they let me alone.
That's good. And it sounds like, sorry, go ahead.
And I did like math. I still like math a lot, but I don't have time now, of course. So yeah, the thing was, the question was whether I would keep on studying math and try to do this multitask, but this would have been impossible to pursue. And other than that, I really craved for some, you know, interactions that was not entirely about the chess world. And this is also why I was in the university, and I felt it was good for my stability, because at the time I entered uni, I was still only 17 years old. So
okay, yeah. And we have one more listener question, Maxime, which is from Igor Feinstein. And he says, given that you're now entering the fourth decade of your life, by the way, your birthday is going to be right before the Grand Swiss. So hopefully that'll be a good omen. And he said, and given that you've been one of the top players in the world for many years, what specific goals are you going for these days? Are you still motivated to go through the grueling tournament cycle to make it to the candidates and ultimately the championship?
But yeah, so then I plan, you know, to play my chess career and, you know, try to do my best to become more champion for sure. And then at the end of the day, what will matter is, you know, that I don't have any regrets. As for actual, you know, my chess career longevity, I have no idea, but I do expect that by the age of 40, I will not be able to play at this level. I do feel like, you know, the top chess career, you know, is generally lasting around 15 years, because it's grueling for sure. But, you know, as a challenge, is worth it.
Glad to hear. And I know it's mentioned on your blog, you and some of your French grandmaster compatriots are fans of Roger Federer and of tennis generally. Does seeing the longevity of like Djokovic and Federer, does that inspire you as a chess player?
It is very inspiring for sure. And it is actually a surprise, you know, how much trouble they're giving to the next guys who are trying their hardest to, you know, get them out, and they don't manage. Well, you know, Roger might be in his last days as a tennis player, and it is kind of painful as a diehard fan, but he had a very good run, and yeah, it's been an inspiration for sure.
Now, obviously, you're pretty well known, Maxime, but Roger Federer is on a whole nother level. Have you ever had any whispers of attempting to meet him or like express your fandom in some way?
Well, I did have, I didn't have any direct contact with him, but last year I did have some contact with his trainer, Ivan Ljubicic, who is a chess fan.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, I know that he's still motivated, and that's all that matters to me.
Yeah, it's inspiring. And it's clear from your blog and from your Instagram that your team and the French national team are very close-knit. And obviously, you guys have a new entrant, Ali Reza Ferruja, who, as we record, is knocking on the door of the top 10 classical players at his young age. So
yeah, that's, I'm curious. Very impressive.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I know you talked about it prospectively with Agat Mater, him joining the team, but I'm curious if like there's been any sort of personal interactions as he becomes a sort of part of the cadre.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we've obviously been in touch, and I'm definitely hoping that he will be part of the French team for the next European Team Championship, which is in November. And of course, you know, it's inspiring, you know, first of all, to have a new player on the French team who can, you know, help me. Getting friends to the top level of chess, even though we had great players, of course, is a tremendous addition and might become even a bigger one in the future. And it's also, of course, very good for me, you know, to keep competitive and, you know, to work to keep that number one spot, which I did lose for a few weeks. And of course, I'll be trying my hardest to, you know, keep that honor for as long as possible.
And does Ali Reza, when you guys talk, do you speak French or English?
We're still on English-speaking terms.
Okay.
But I know he's taking French lessons regularly, so I hope that he will be able to speak French at some point. But even if he doesn't, English is good enough.
Yeah, obviously your English is great, and I'm sure he's getting plenty of practice. So the last topic, Maxime, and I have to admit, I feel a little guilty even bringing it up because I feel like you get asked about the Neidorf and the Grunfeld every interview, but in sort of interfacing with listeners, it always comes up in conversation. So my first question, Maxime, is in researching the interview, you know, I've quoted you on the show a couple times saying that you were apparently asked at some point when you would stop playing the night, that you said you would keep playing the Neidorf until the doctor told you to stop. But then I tried to find the quote and I couldn't. So I wanted to check in to see if you really said that or not.
I did say that. I don't remember when, but I did say that. But maybe it was just a casual interview, not a lengthy one.
Yeah, it's very funny. and I was curious more broadly, you know, it's been mentioned many times that most of the elite players have these dazzlingly wide repertoires, whereas when you're black, one can make a reasonable guess that they might see those openings. So I was curious, like, what do you think is there a philosophical difference or is it like more of a feel-based thing? Why do you think it is that you're the one sort of carrying the torch for like not as wide of a repertoire?
Well, I would say maybe the difference is, for instance, a player like Wesley Soares, I feel a very narrow repertoire. We basically know he's going to play the Berlin. The difference is inaccuracy in the Berlin doesn't cost as much as in the Neidorf or in the Grunfeld. And but I do have a good feel with these openings. I've obviously had some setbacks. I've had a lot of success with them as well. But then, obviously, if at some point it becomes too much and, you know, the doctor knocks on my door, I will effect some changes. I've actually started doing that, adding a bit more variables recently. But for now, I don't see the need to change things dramatically. And, you know, depending on the occasion, of course, this might happen, but I was still very comfortable playing this in the candidates. And I really feel like this, you know, the openings were the reason I didn't win the candidacies. It was just my chess abilities that were not good enough. If I had the chess abilities I then had in the Singfield Cup, I mean, I wouldn't say I would have won it, because maybe, you know, for instance, Jan might not have lost the last round where he was guaranteed to win. You know, it's very, you know, every tournament scenario is different, but definitely I would have scored more points.
Yeah, makes sense. And obviously it's a funny time to be asking you, because your results have been amazing lately. And yeah, looking forward to seeing more. And just one more follow-up. You've mentioned sort of in older interviews, it sounded like you don't enjoy opening work as much as some other players. Is that still the case for you?
For sure. But even more than opening work, it's a memorization part, which is grueling. But I do live for my passion. I do have challenges, you know, to become the best player in the world, which is not something you know, many people can, you know, say or even imagine. So of course there has to be some grueling parts out of that, and I'm definitely not complaining about that.
Yeah, I just saw a quote yesterday. Jeff Bezos said that in almost any job, you're going to end up doing 50% or more of things you don't want to do. And it seems like you might be clocking in below 50%. I would guess.
Probably.
Yeah. But it is, I mean, it's stressful, I'm sure. I mean, and you just slept in your bed for the first time in 2 months. So it's not to be discounted, the sacrifice involved.
For sure. Yeah, it was a big relief to be back in Paris. Actually, the first thing I did, so I had barely slept in the plane. I came to my apartment at 8 a.m. and the first thing I did was just take a five miles walk, basically, all around my neighborhood.
Yeah, it must have been a good feeling.
For sure, yeah.
Okay, well, Maxime, I think you've answered all my questions. I want to thank you for being so generous with your time. Is there anything else you would like to say to our listeners? Anything they should be on the lookout for other than your continued busy schedule?
I think that was pretty good. I think we covered a lot, and it was my pleasure.
Thank you. It was amazing. And just to get the rundown of where to root for you, you've got the online Champions Chess Tour, the Meltwater Final.
That's right.
Online. And then is it the next event is the Grand Swiss?
Yes, that's right. So I play in the Grand Swiss and then in the European Team Championship.
Okay, so things are slowing down a little bit. Okay, great. Well, thanks again, Maxime. This has been amazing, an honor for me, and you really appreciate your candor and your humor, and definitely will be rooting for you.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you to everyone who listens to and supports the podcast, and most of all, thank you to my producer, Matthew Passy. Be sure to check us out on social media. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at BennyFishel1. We also have a Perpetual Chess Facebook group where we continue the conversation about each episode. I've even got the Instagram page locked and loaded, actually posting clips every week. So you can follow at Perpetual Chess to catch some clips there. I also want to thank our sponsors, of course, Chessable.com, the original sponsor of Perpetual Chess, Aim Chess, Chess Mood. Thanks. I'm proud to be affiliated with all of these sites. Also want to thank Blue Wire Podcast, with whom I partner. Big shout out to Blue Wire. Check them out for sports podcasts. But most of all, I want to thank the individuals who helped make Perpetual Chess go via PayPal or Patreon. And of course, they get to find out the guests, send in questions, hear occasional GM lectures on Zoom, and even get ad-free podcasts. So thank you all for supporting Perpetual Chess and keeping it going. So without further ado, I would like to give special thanks to the following people and entities. Chessable.com, David Lazarus of LazmanChess.com, Quality Chess Books, the Capital City Chess Club, the Abysmal Depths of Chess blog. Shout out to JB. Adapta Interactive Web Designs and Services, The Apprentice Twitch Channel, Aniti Deer, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porteau, Bill Sigler, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, The Charlotte Chess Center, The Chess Central's Chess Blog, Chessmood.com, Chris Flanagan, Chris Lott, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel He, Danny Davidson, David Mitchell, I am Dimitri Schneider, Douglas Wilson, I am Eric Rosen, Farhan Thawar, Faraz Sawaf, Gary Foreman, Glenn Downing, Greg Harfst, Greg Shahadi, Gregory Gulick, Hampus Axelson, James Kennedy, Jay Garrison, Jeff Martinson, Jeff Schaefer, Jeremy Nilsson, John Jernigan, John Rockefeller, John MacArthur, Kevin Forsyth, Kevin Gilmore, Kevin O'Callaghan, Kevin Pryor, King Cell, King's Crusher YouTube channel, the law offices of Stuart Katz, Matthew Feeney, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mr. Mike Shahadi, the famous Mr. Dodgy, the NerdNace Twitch channel, Peter McManus, GM Peter Prohaska, Peter Soddy, Philip Vlummens, the Playmore Chess Academy of the Hamden Chess Club, Ray Lillywhite, Reuven Fisher, Robert Hansen, Ross Crossland, Seattle Chess Club, Shane Unger, Stefan Kelty, Steven Martinez, Sven Gearson, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryant of StrongChess.com, Todd Kennedy, The Vintage Patchers, which is a Chess.com improver group, and Wayne Beam. I would also like to give thanks to East Viega, Adam Fowler, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Al Hastings, Alan and Maggie Sue, Alex Pejas, Alexander Markovitz, Antonio Cancino, Antonio Leonfort, FM Andre Tarakov, Dr. Andrew Perry, Angus McLeod, Barry Hessian, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Bill Trammell, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brandon Halseed, Brian Chase, Brian Mullis, Bruce Scott, Brian Tillis of Palm Beach Chess, Cameron Davis, Ken Kabadai, Chad Hilton, Chad Likens of Rose City Chess in Portland, Oregon, Chess for Charity in Jacksonville, Chess Patzer Spain, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Kiefer, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Shabri, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, a.k.a. Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Costa Caros, Courtney Fry, Craig Mallon, Daniel Ginsburg, Daniel Naylor, Dave Best, Dave Saylor, David Blaskoczek, David Brown, David Goris, David Hamblin, David Cramley, David Peterson, Dennis Parrish, FM, Donnie Ariel, Dwayne Edmonds, Ed Daly, Ed Mead, Edwin Rodriguez, Ethan Smith, Evan Rosenberg, Ewan Richardson, Ian Mason, Felipe Melo Perilla, Fox Valley Chess Club, Francis Letart Lavoie, Frank Tortoris, MD, Frank Zananis, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Gautam Narula, Gene Stewart, George Foote, George Harris, Giovanni Russo, Gregory Higgins, Hans Schutt, Harish Srinivasan, Howard Vihan, Jacob Kovacs, Jason Apollo, Jason Murray, Jacques Perry, James Aspinwall, James Bonastia, James Muir, Jason Willem, Jay Tuttle, Jaydeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Yep Hoyland, Jerry Wells, Jesse Damas Dekumus, excuse me, Jesse McNulty, Jim Ratliff, Jim Sadler, Joe DeSano, Joe Valdez, Joel Thomas Ramos, John McAdams, John Tully, Juan Almaguer, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jonathan Bannister, Jonathan Slater, John Quist, John Tully, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, Justin Goodfeller, Jen Shahadi, Joe Rocky, John Thompson, Grandmaster Josh Friedel, I am Kare Christensen, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, I am Kostya Kovutsky of Chess Dojo, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Kyle McAvoy, Larry Cook, Larry Ryforth, Macaulay Peterson, Maria Emelyanova, a.k.a. Photo Chess, Mark Chaves, Mark Fitzpatrick, Mark Miller, Mark Wilkins, Marco Bulatovich, Martin Knudsen, Martin Krug, Matt Ferrari, Matthew Allen Coughlin, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, Matthias Plock, the Mechanics Institute of San Francisco, Michael Ollard, Michael Hudson, Mike Clem, Mitchell Fabian, Nate Goble, Nate Solon, Neil Bruce, Negma Milijanov, Nicholas Isabel, Olaf Mueller Michaels, Pablo Davila, Grandmaster Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Eckert, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Queenside Management Limited of Switzerland, Randall Montgomery, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hollenbach, Richard Tucker, Robert Callahan, Robert Turner, Robert Wall, Robert Wilson, Rory Coleman, Ryan Berg, Samson Teaches Chess, Satyajit Malugu, The Say Chess Publishing, Unstoppable Empire, Scott McKinnon, Scott Rose, Sean Krause, Sebastian Finsterwalder, Sergey McKagan, Seth Ruzica, Seth Will, Sean Tracy, Silver Knights in Richmond, Simon Schmidt, Stefan Roller, Stephen Miller, and Tom George. WGM Tatyav Abrahamian, Terry King, Thomas Brown, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, FM Timothy Wall, Tobiah Rex, Tom Edsel, Tommy Farron, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Victor Beauchamp, William Brock, William Peterson, FM Zhao Cheng of Chess1000.com, and last but never least, Zhivko Stoyanov. So thanks for listening, everyone. We will catch you all next week.
Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.